Our story is about famous Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, who lived over a century. Rabbi Akiva, who fathered all of the oral law, so to speak. His disciples were the great leaders of Torah Sheba'al Peh. Rabbi Akiva, who ended his first marriage with a child, Yoshua, and knew nothing about Torah, and then worked as a shepherd for Kalba Savua, which was not his real name. Kalba Savua was his nickname, because if people walked into his house hungry, like a kalba, like a kelev, like a dog, they'd walk out Savua, satiated. Kalba Savua, who was one of the great philanthropists of the time, Kalba Savua, who had in his home not only the poor, but also the learned of the time, the sages, the great rabbis would gather in his home. So Kalba Savua, who was one of the great philanthropists of the time, he had Akiva ben Yosef, Akiva who was a descendant from Gerim. He had Akiva working as his shepherd. And Akiva was a humble man, and he had an issue with the learned people he saw around him. The little bit he saw, he knew that they were haughty and that bothered him. And he used to say, if you'd only give me a rabbi, I'd bite him like a donkey. The student said, why like a donkey, rabbi? He said, because other animals can break a bone when they bite or take off flesh when they bite. And a donkey does both at the same time when he bites. He can take off flesh and break a bone. And that's how badly I hated the rabbis. So, Kalba Savua, amongst this Torah and wealth, there is growing his daughter Rachel. And Rachel, obviously Kalba Savua had great hopes for her, that she'd marry one of the leaders of the Jewish people, one of the great rabbis that frequented his home. He had servants, and she had servants. And she valued Torah. She grew up in a house of Torah. Now, Rachel sees this shepherd who's already been in a marriage once in his life, and this shepherd doesn't know any Torah, doesn't have any wealth, wasn't such a young man, and was illiterate, didn't even know one pasuk, didn't know how to say Shema Yisrael. And this shepherd, Akiva, this shepherd has great traits. He has modesty, he has honesty. And when Rachel sees those traits, Rachel says, you know, if only he would go to yeshiva, he'd be better than all the ones who are learning there already. We just got to get him in. And Rachel says to him, you know, Akiva, I want to marry you. If I marry you, will you go to yeshiva? And Akiva says yes. Now this story has many different versions and different sources as to how Akiva ended up going to yeshiva. Now Rachel has a problem that her father is not going to approve of this marriage. And she tries to get engaged in hiding without her father knowing. And when Kalba Savua hears this, that his daughter got engaged with a pauper, the lowest of the low, a shepherd, that's like maybe saying a truck driver in today's day. I don't know what's considered the job where people are most crass, the most percentage of crass people. So in their days it was a shepherd. The Talmud says the shepherds, you'd have to worry about all kinds of things with shepherds. The shepherds were the most dishonest and most crass people, and here you have a shepherd who doesn't even know Aleph Beis. Kalba Savua got very upset. Here his daughter got engaged without asking him, and engagement in those days was biblical engagement. And not only did she get engaged, but she got engaged to a man like this. And he says to her, you're independent, Rachel, right? You went and got engaged on your own to a man like this. Well, Rachel, leave. Go, be with your husband. But you're getting nothing from my wealth. I'm not giving from my wealth to a man like this. Now we have to understand where Kalba Savua was coming from. In those days, those who weren't learned, it's not just that they didn't know Torah. They didn't know how to behave to a wife either. Chazal said, you marry off your daughter to an Am Haaretz, it's like tying her before a lion. Just like a lion pounces on his prey before he devours it, so too an Am Haaretz is capable of beating his wife and then demanding intimacy. Chazal said, the Am Haaretz, they're not listening to the rabbis, they don't know what the Torah is all about, and their behavior was worse than worse. So Kalba Savua was very, very upset, and his daughter had made the move. Now, legally, there was no way, there wasn't really a way out. She was married to Rabbi Akiva. She left her father's wealth and went and married Rabbi Akiva. Now, they didn't have a place to live. So, they lived in a silo. Not even a silo, a barn. They rented a space in a barn, and all they had was hay to cover themselves. They didn't have blankets, they didn't have pillows. And here Rabbi Akiva sees Rachel, who throughout his life he saw her as the daughter of the wealthy Kalba Savua. She's sleeping in the hay with him. She's accustomed to a warm house, she's accustomed to beauty and nice dresses, and now what does she have? To shiver in the hay with Rabbi Akiva. They get up in the morning and her hair is all frazzled, filled with hay. And Akiva sits there impatiently, starts taking the hay out of her hair. Remember, he is her senior by quite a number of years. As he's taking the hay out of her hair, he says, Rachel, if I only could, I'd get you a Jerusalem of gold. Jerusalem of gold was an ornament that the wealthy women used to wear. It was like it was an ornament that went over the head, like where the tefillin goes. What do they call that thing that goes? What? Maybe a tiara. I don't know what a tiara is. Like a headband, but it had a whole engraving. It was like a miniature crown, right? Tiara with Jerusalem engraved on it of gold. Now, as he's thinking about their dismal state, a poor man knocks on the door. And that poor man was none other than Eliyahu Hanavi, dressed up as a pauper. And he says to them, do me a favor, my wife just gave birth, and we don't even have hay to lay on or to put our baby on. Could you spare some hay? And they gave them hay, and then Rabbi Akiva turns to Rachel and says, you see, there are people who are even poorer than us. Here we thought we had it bad. They don't even have the hay that we have. Now, it's interesting, the Chovos HaLevavos writes that we gauge our happiness in life, we gauge our lot based on what we see around us. The fact that Rabbi Akiva saw someone was worse off than himself, that gave him strength. Rachel, it seems, was strong. She didn't necessarily need that shot in the arm. She says to Rabbi Akiva, you go to Beis Medrash and learn Torah. Don't worry about me. I'll manage. They agree that he'll go learn for 12 years. So this older man, 40 years old, he goes to the academy and he starts learning Aleph Beis with the kids. And it's like coming to Machon Meir at 40 years old. He's learning. And then he works his way up till he's a student by the great Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. That's Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurknos and Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya. And he works very hard. Chazal tells Rabbi Akiva, when he daven, would sway so much in his prayer that his swaying, every shuckle would move his feet a millimeter, like he'd sway a drop. But from the beginning of his prayer to the end of his prayer, he'd cross the whole room. You'd leave him at one end. By the time he was done, he was at the other end. He put all his strength into his learning. And Rachel manages. She's happy. She's getting word that her husband, Akiva, is getting bigger and bigger. Together with his son, Yehoshua, they've been learning. And Rachel is among the poor. She doesn't have too much. In all those years, for 12 years, as they agreed, Akiva is learning. On the side, he's working a little bit cutting wood, and he's sending home a little bit of money. And after 12 years, the deal is, Akiva should come home. So, Akiva comes home. And he's coming home, and there are 12,000 students with him. And there's a huge ruckus. Rabbi Akiva is entering town with 12,000 students. He's headed to his home. He comes back to the barn. And as he's approaching, he stands by the door. He hears his wife is talking to someone. And the man has come in and he says to her, "You know, your father was right kicking you out of his house. What are you doing going and marrying a guy of such a low stature? He doesn't fit you. Look at that. This bum left you for 12 years. Not only does he get you kicked out of your father's house, he's left you for 12 years. And Rachel looks at him and says, "You know what? If I could only get word to him, I'd tell him to stay another 12 years and not get back home. I wish he could learn more." Rabbi Akiva hears that. His hand is on the doorknob. He's ready to walk in. His wife just said, "If I could only get word to him, I'd tell him, stay another 12 years. Don't come back." Rabbi Akiva makes an about face, goes back to yeshiva, and learns another 12 years. And this time when he comes back, he has 24,000 students. Obviously he sent word to her, "I heard what you said." Obviously, it wasn't like she was sitting at home wondering, "Gee, what happened to Akiva?" The Talmud tells us there was a rabbi who used to leave home all year and only come home Erev Yom Kippur. One year he was busy learning Torah. He was sitting on a porch. Not Rabbi Akiva, a different rabbi. And the Talmud says every time he'd come back, he was such a giant that there would be bolts of lightning that would greet his way into town. And this rabbi was learning Torah on a balcony, and it came time when he had agreed with his wife he'd come home. But he was in the middle of something. So he said, "Okay, so I won't come exactly when I said I'd come. I just got to finish what I'm in the middle of." And the balcony collapsed and he died. Whatever he agreed with his wife was okay. When he thought he could take a little bit more than was agreed upon, God held it against him. So obviously Rabbi Akiva over here didn't just say, "Well, she'll figure it out." A giant like Rabbi Akiva, that doesn't even have to say it in the Gemara. Obviously, he left her word, and she was thrilled. He comes back with 24,000 students. The whole city goes out to greet him. He's considered the giant of Torah. And his wife, Rachel, is going out too. And she's wearing her tatters, and her neighbors say to her, "How are you going to greet your husband in tatters? Come on, go borrow a nicer garment. Go out in beauty." And Rachel refused. And she says, "What are you worried about? That a great sage like Rabbi Akiva is going to look at me and say, what's wrong with her? Why is she in tatters?" Yodea tzadik din dalim. A tzadik understand what the poor are undergoing. He's going to understand that I had nothing better to wear in his honor. So she's pushing her way to the front. There are 24,000 people with him. The whole city has come out to see the giant who's come to town. And she throws herself in front of him. And she's excited. She's weeping. She's laughing. For 24 years she's been waiting for this moment that her husband's going to come back and know Torah. The students see this beggar woman at the rabbi's feet in tatters, and they want to push her away. Shh, shh. Let the rabbi get through, right? They don't know it's his wife. And Rabbi Akiva looks at them and says, "Let go of her. What are you doing? All of your Torah, all of my Torah, everything that we've been learning, it's all hers. It's all thanks to her." And the truth is that all of the oral law that we have today is thanks to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva and his students, when we say every Mishnah, Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, a Mishnah that's plainly stated is the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir was a disciple of Rabbi Akiva. Safra, Sifri, Any major work in the oral law in the time of the Tanoim was a disciple of Rabbi Akiva's. So Rabbi Akiva really set the oral law on its feet. He became the giant that maintained the oral law, established the oral law for all future generations. We had oral law before Rabbi Akiva, but we were at risk of losing it. And Rabbi Akiva, with the students he set up, Rabbi Akiva really, thanks to him, we still have the oral law today. We're going to have to pick up here next time. We're short on time. How the story continues, what happens with Kalba Savua and Rabbi Akiva. It's interesting that these students wanted to push Rachel away. Chazal tell us that these 24,000 students all passed away between Pesach and Lag BaOmer. And that's why we practice customs of mourning between Pesach and Lag BaOmer over the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva that passed away during this time.
Didn't it stop them on Lag BaOmer?
Stopped them on Lag BaOmer, right? Okay, so we'll pick up here next time, Ezra.
So why do those mourn for